This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Higgins Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
A new study says dirty air is the deadliest form of pollution. It's the fourth leading cause of premature deaths, and it costs the global economy hundreds of billions of dollars every year in lost labor.
That's VOA's Jody Kapua reporting. Details coming up.
Also, the deadline to file legal challenges in the presidential election in Gabon is today. And Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party is being accused by the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission of denying food aid to opposition party supporters during drought.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight.
Our top story this hour today is the deadline in Gabon to file legal challenges in the presidential election. Challenges were supposed to be filed with the Constitutional Court 1 hour ago, but the court has the power to extend the deadline. The election results are not final until the Constitutional Court certifies them. Last Wednesday, the Election Commission in Gabon said incumbent Ali Bongo had won, but challenger Jean Ping said there were irregularities and called the election fraudulent. That triggered violence and protests. Many have called for a recount of the election, which was decided by less than 6,000 votes. Media reports today say three African heads of state will soon visit Gabon. They reportedly are Macky Sall of Senegal, Idriss Déby of Chad, and Mahamadou Issoufou of Niger. Also today, the African Union has announced it was indefinitely postponing its mission to Gabon.
Here in Washington, members of Congress held a hearing yesterday about ongoing troubles in South Sudan, but the hearing by the House Foreign Affairs Subcommittee was interrupted when demonstrators in the audience held up signs protesting the political turmoil in Gabon. Reporter Ayan Bior attending the hearing and has a report.
The hearing was all about South Sudan, but Democratic Congresswoman Karen Bass, who represents the West Coast state of California, took time to acknowledge the protesters, some of whom donned the blue, yellow, and green colors of the Gabonese flag.
There are several people here from Gabon who are expressing their concern about the elections that took place. I just want you to know that we see you. We read your posters. I know you were asked to put them down, but we did see what they said. And we also are concerned, and I just wanted to acknowledge that your presence has not gone unnoticed.
About 10 protesters stood silently in the back of the hearing room, holding up posters held high, facing U.S. lawmakers who came to listen to testimony about the ongoing violence in South Sudan. Some of the posters said President Ali Bongo, who was re-elected in late August amid accusations of voter fraud, used fear tactics and intimidation to win that election. Other posters said that the lives of Gabonese matter and that the country's constitution should be respected. Ariane Lenzonzo, the president of the Gabonese American Association, says they did not mean to disrespect members of Congress or take attention away from South Sudan, but the protesters were compelled to show up at the hearing because they are genuinely afraid that if the U.S. does not speak about Gabon, it too could be stuck in a man-made cycle of violence.
America have to stop Mr. Bongo's brutal rulership and to press on Mr. Bongo regime to publish the result about polling station. And the last point will be that America to stop election violence and political imprisonment.
The protesters also demanded that President Bongo release political prisoners. Frank Jugtane, a protester and member of the Gabonese diaspora, says he doesn't think the U.S. is doing enough.
I'm not saying that they're not doing anything, but they can do more because Gabon is also a country, part of the whole community. Okay, and I think that when President Obama was elected, he said that he will support every people in the world that want freedom. And I think it's an opportunity for him to fulfill one of the wishes that he made when he was elected.
Jugtane says the death toll in Gabon is rising and political tension is threatening the security of the region.
If Gabon becomes unstable, I think the whole region will be in trouble. So it's important for Gabon to remain peaceful. It's important for Gabon to remain strong and the people live in harmony. And I think that if the U.S. do not use the leverage of power to make sure that Gabon remain a stable country and a peaceful country, I think that in the long run, in the future, it will be a disaster.
Cheryl Bennett, a Gabonese American, says the government is making matters worse by restricting the freedom of speech in the country.
The independent press has been completely silenced in Gabon. Two of the independent news stations have been attacked. One has been able to broadcast again, but another has not. With the shutdown of the internet for about 4 or 5 days, it was impossible to get information in and out of Gabon.
Ed Royce, chairman of the House Committee on Foreign Relations, released a statement yesterday urging President Obama to push for a recount in Gabon. Roy says the integrity of the Gabonese election result must be investigated and that the U.S. cannot let this cloud of uncertainty loom over U.S.-Gabon relations. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
The Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission has accused the ruling ZANU-PF party of denying food aid to opposition party supporters in the drought-stricken south of the country. Commissioners say the ruling party members excluded certain citizens in the distribution of food aid during the worst drought in 30 years. The distribution of aid in this case is handled independently of aid from international organizations.
A new study says dirty air is the deadliest form of pollution. It's the fourth leading cause of premature deaths, and it costs the global economy hundreds of billions of dollars every year in lost labor. VOA's Jody Campoa reports.
The World Bank and the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation published the study called The Cost of Air Pollution, Strengthening the Economic Case for Action. Uddhavashi Narayan is a World Bank senior environmental economist.
The main motivation for this report was really to highlight the challenge of air pollution, how widespread it is, and also to make a clear sort of economic case for countries to act. You know, countries can't ignore this problem. They need to act.
The study says about 90% of the population in low and middle-income countries are exposed to dangerous levels of ambient air pollution.
When we say ambient air pollution, we are really talking about very tiny particles that are around us in the air that we are breathing. There are many different sources of these particles that are really 1/30th the size of the human hair, so they're really, really tiny.
The World Health Organization says most of those tiny particles come from fuel combustion, in industry, power plants, cars and trucks, and cooking stoves. The study says in 2013, 5.5 million lives were lost to diseases associated with outdoor and household air pollution. Lung cancer, asthma, chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder, or COPD, and respiratory infections are all associated with air pollution. It also can contribute to cardiovascular disease. Air pollution can hit children especially hard because their immune systems and lungs may not have fully developed yet.
What we're also finding is that it is a health risk but also a drag on development. In our report, we find that globally, $225 billion was lost in labor income-related costs due to premature mortality caused by air pollution.
The World Bank senior environmental economist says low- and middle-income countries should address these problems as part of their development plans. But Narayan says there's another issue, too.
We find that this is an issue where countries, if by acting on local air pollution, thereby saving precious lives, countries can simultaneously act on the agenda of climate change.
Some regions are harder hit by the effects of air pollution than others.
The largest number of deaths from air pollution are in South Asia and East Asia region, both because they have high levels of exposure, but also because they have some of the biggest populations. And then South Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa actually both have the highest levels of labor income losses because they have relatively young populations, that are being affected and populations in their working age. And when you look at the welfare costs, it's East Asia, Pacific, and South Asia.
The World Bank describes air pollution as a challenge threatening basic human welfare while constraining economic growth. Narayan says the benefits of regulations curtailing it far outweigh the costs. The report makes no recommendations on how to solve air pollution. It leaves that to individual countries to decide. But it does urge nations to act quickly. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Officials from the European Union and Turkey are scheduled to hold their first high-level meeting since the coup attempt in Turkey July 15th. The meeting is set for tomorrow in Ankara, and the migrant deal is expected to be on the agenda. Under the agreement, Turkey has restricted the flow of Syrian, Iraqi, and other refugees from entering Europe through Greece. But Turkey has threatened to abandon the deal if the EU fails to grant its citizens visa-free travel. The EU is demanding Turkey improve its human rights record. In related news, the Associated Press reports that starting in October, the EU will give money to refugees in Turkey to help pay for food, housing, and education. Meanwhile, in Sicily, two African men accused of people smuggling and murder have been acquitted. Reuters reports the judge in Palermo says the men were forced at gunpoint by smugglers to operate a rubber boat overcrowded with migrants. One of the men is from Senegal and the other from the Gambia. Hundreds of similar cases are still pending in Italy, but today's ruling could set a precedent.
Kenya is hosting the Africa Green Revolution Forum this week. While the organizers say the continent is well on its way to an agricultural renaissance, significant challenges remain. Lenny Ruvaga has the story from Nairobi.
The forum is wrapping up with what organizers are calling a blockbuster moment, a pledge of $30 billion during the next 10 years to support smallholder farmers and local African agribusinesses. The donors include African governments, businesses, and development partners, many of whom are present here in Nairobi. Experts have many theories on what it will take to make Africa's green revolution a reality. Country manager James Krask of Yara, a leading fertilizer manufacturing company in Africa, says better quality seeds and fertilizer would make a difference.
I think really we need to look at the farm management for smallholders, the quality of the inputs for smallholders, but especially the knowledge level of the smallholders in how to use those inputs to get the most optimal yield and quality so that they can move from smallholders can move from subsistence farming to commercial farming and really become more and more profitable.
Many African countries are seeking to become food self-sufficient. It is a goal that has gained even more urgency in the past year. Low global commodity prices have tugged down African economies and currencies, raising the prices of inputs at markets. El Nino-induced drought left 30 million people food insecure in southern Africa. 50 years ago, Africa was exporting agricultural products to the world. A new report released by Agra Alliance, which is hosting the forum, states that the continent spends $35 billion importing food each year and loses $4 billion to food waste. Rockefeller Foundation Managing Director for Africa, Mamadou Bitaye, sees a comprehensive approach to growth.
The continent produces sufficiently to feed itself. The problem we have is that about 30 to 40% of everything we produce is lost due to inefficiencies. That's where the challenge of feeding ourselves comes in. So it is really important that we look at agriculture in total, pre and post-harvest management, value addition, transforming our agricultural produce to meet the changing consumption needs of our populations.
Addressing the forum, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta said agriculture is also about more than just food.
We are aware growth in agriculture is up to 11 times more effective at reducing poverty
than growth in any other sector. And we also recognize that until this sector is transformed, our hopes of industrialization as a continent and for us to have a flourishing manufacturing sector will be a little more than a pipe dream without transforming our agriculture.
The Agra Alliance says African governments would need to invest at least an additional $13 billion annually to truly revolutionize agriculture on the continent. The goal would be to move from the small-scale subsistence-style farming that at the moment employs the majority of Africa's workforce to mechanical and profit-based agriculture. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
According to the International World Wide Web Consortium, 3.5 billion people worldwide have access to the Internet. Internet availability continues to grow in Africa as elsewhere, but a new study released by the Internet Society Organization suggests that actual Internet use on the continent is sluggish. To find out why, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Dawit Bekele, the Internet Society's Regional Director for Africa.
Until now, the narrative was that people don't access the Internet because it is not available to them, which was mostly true. But nowadays, thanks to mobile Internet, most Africans have access and they can even afford it. However, they choose not to use it because they don't find relevant content for them, which slows down the growth of Internet access in Africa. For example, the majority of Africans don't speak the languages that are most common on the Internet. For example, English or French or Portuguese, which are the former colonial languages, they speak their local languages, and there are 2,000 of them in Africa. If the content is not in the language that they understand, they will definitely not be interested in it because it doesn't have content that they can read and understand. And one important barrier the study had identified is that it is somewhat of a challenge for business people to monetize their local content.
What does that mean, monetize content?
That means when you produce content, you have to get benefit out of it. For example, by getting advertisement through various means. However, the major platforms that are used for advertisement don't allow local content in African languages to be used for this kind of purpose. For example, I am from Ethiopia, and Amharic content wouldn't be eligible for advertisement on those platforms. And that is a barrier because if you cannot make money out of your local content, you tend not to produce it. Definitely, the solution is that there is more content in the local languages that the Africans speak. And those contents cannot be produced by anyone but those people who speak those languages, who are in those countries. There are other things, for example, like apps. For apps, if you take the user side, the users have to be able to download apps. And some apps are not downloadable in some countries. And as you might imagine, nowadays, apps are really big industry, and it is really high time that Africans become major players in that industry.
I know it's sort of a simple question, but could you tell me why it's a good thing for more and more people in Africa to have sort of universal internet?
Definitely. The internet has an enormous transformational power. We believe that it can change the society for the good. We believe that it can help transform the education. We believe that it can create jobs, as it has created in other parts of the world. In fact, many people believe that the GDP growth that we have seen in Africa since the early 2000s is directly related to the improvement of communications thanks to mobile and internet. When we increase the internet access, we give more opportunities for people to be productive, to find new ways of improving their lives. That is a very good reason for everybody to make sure all Africans have access to the internet.
That was Dawit Bekele, the Internet Society's Regional Director for Africa. He spoke from Tanzania with VOA's Adam Phillips.
There is more concerning news about the Zika virus today. Researchers say it can live in the eyes, and evidence of the virus has been found in the tears of animals. But it is still unclear what that means for transmission of the virus. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
About one-third of babies who are born infected with the Zika virus have inflammation of the eyes, sometimes rendering them blind. In adults, experts say Zika causes eye infections, including uveitis and conjunctivitis, in up to 15% of people who are symptomatic. To get a better handle on the problem, researchers studied the eyes of a mouse model of Zika, discovering that eye infections are widespread, according to Michael Diamond, a professor of molecular microbiology at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis.
There were many different parts of the eye, the cornea, the iris, the retina, all of them seem to have virus associated with them in particular cells, and indeed the fluids associated with the eye as well, and that's when we started to look to see whether there might be a virus or a viral RNA detectable in tears.
Researchers led by Diamond did indeed find genetic material in tears. It was still present in the mouse tears 28 days after scientists infected them with Zika. It's known that a number of bodily fluids, including semen and saliva, can contain Zika virus and may be infectious. But when investigators tried to infect a group of rodents with the tears of mice that contain viral RNA, they were unable to do it. Diamond says that doesn't mean human tears are not infectious. In fact, infected bodily fluids may explain why Zika is spreading so rapidly, more quickly than what scientists would have predicted based upon the amount of virus found in human blood. Compared to other mosquito-borne illnesses, such as dengue fever, there's relatively little Zika in human blood for a mosquito to transmit from person to person through a bite. Diamond and colleagues are working with clinicians in Latin America, Puerto Rico, and Florida who are treating Zika patients to get samples of human tears for testing.
Only after doing that will we begin to get a handle as to whether the tears are carrying enough infectious virus to transmit it or whether there's very small amounts and they're not really transmissible. However, it still could be used for diagnostics.
Diamond says testing bodily fluids, including tears, could be a simple and painless way to diagnose Zika infection. The finding that eyes harbor the virus, published in the journal Cell Reports, also has implications for eye tissue transplants from diseased donors to those whose eyesight is impaired. If pregnant women are infected with Zika, the child they are carrying is at risk being born with microcephaly, an abnormally small head and brain that causes severe birth defects and even death. It has also caused the paralytic disease Guillain-Barré syndrome in adults. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share the ideas on the topic at hand. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on The Voice of America.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. who is going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th. Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.